Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. Concluding our 2011 Mother's Day series, my guest for this morning is a mother and daughter team, Token Whitfield and Devin Hibbard. Token and Devin are co-founders of Beat for Life, a nonprofit organization that eradicates extreme poverty by creating bridges of understanding between impoverished Africans and concerned world citizens. Token, Devin, and I will be discussing about their life's journey and their work with Beat for Life. Although they are not able to be with us live this morning, I have a tape interview for everyone to listen to. Please enjoy this wonderful interview with Token and Devin. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning,
Johnny. Good morning.
Wonderful. I'm very excited to have you two joining me this morning to talk about your wonderful work in Africa. Let us start by getting to know you two a little better. Devin, please describe your life growing up with your family.
Well, I had an amazing childhood. I was raised in the mountains of Colorado and really had sort of what you think of as a fairy book childhood. We lived in a very small town. I went to a two-room school and I had a horse and would go riding with my friends every day. So I grew up really with tons of love and support. And both my mother and my father really had a strong belief, had spent time in the Peace Corps, living around the world, and had a strong belief in the importance of looking not only at our community, but our global community. And I was with a strong ethic of giving back, you know, the opportunities that you had received, that you had a responsibility to help others grow and develop as well.
So did you get a chance to travel as well?
I did. I traveled some as I was growing up, but really it's college when I first set off and moved to Southeast Asia, where my mom was working with Save the Children for a short time, and that inspired me to take my next year of college and move to India for 9 months. It was really a hugely transformative experience in my life, realizing that, you know, what we think is normal and day-to-day in the United States really is not the case for most of the people around the world who live in extreme poverty.
So when we talk about learning geography, you have firsthand information being in India yourself.
Well, some parts of the world. The world's pretty huge, but I had the opportunity to travel to quite a few countries and to meet amazing people around the world.
Fantastic. Token, as a mother, how did you share your views about life with your children?
Well, you know, when you're raising children, it's very much day-to-day. It's how you are. It's what you do with your life and how you share your attitudes and beliefs in a day-to-day way. So in my life, my mother had always been a humanitarian, no matter where we were living. My father was a naval officer, but my mom would always be doing something for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It was one day I remember she was at a Braille typewriter, and I could hear this thunk, 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 and she told me she was actually transcribing a book for a blind neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So I myself grew up in a home where helping others was a high value. And I just continued that on in my own career, made those choices to work with medically poor people, started an indigent clinic, went on to work with people living with AIDS. So my children were just a part of whatever we were doing. And in the context of working with AIDS people, they got to know young people who were living and dying with AIDS, and they got to see a lifetime of dedication. Devin's dad is a doctor, and so also from him, she saw a man who was completely dedicated to helping other people. And, you know, how you treat one another, how you treat the animals of the world, what kind of respect you have for nature. So, you know, getting outside and having a life that was based on relationships and being outside rather than in accumulating things. Or, you know, we chose to really have a simple community-based mm-hmm. life and a life of humanitarian service. So, of course, I was thrilled as I saw my daughter maturing and also choosing to look at opportunities to help other people. It's not something you tell your children to do. It's something they learn, I think, just in the day-to-day way.
The good news is that there's some sort of continuity here from grandma to mom and to a daughter. That's the beauty. And I think that's something that connects everyone spiritually.
I agree. And I wonder about my great-grandmother because I have a poem from my grandmother who says that her mother used to wait for her at the garden gate when she came home from school. And to me, that one line about my great-grandmother mm-hmm. is, here was another woman who showed her love in a very abundant way towards her daughter. So mm-hmm. I have a feeling that Devin and I are in a long line, and no doubt Devin is passing it on to her children too. So, you know, love begets love.
That's correct. Wonderful. Can you share with us the discovery, the moment that you sent an intention? You have done so many things. I know that prior to starting Beat for Life, but how did Beat for Life got off the ground?
Well, you know, that's an interesting story because it really started with a very clear intention and a small prayer. My husband is an AIDS doctor, and we had decided that after our children went off to college that we were going to spend some time in Africa because he had skills that were so needed. So right before we left, Devin and I and our good friend Jenny Jordan, the three of us, sat together and we lit a small candle and we said, let's see if we can find a project in Africa. Surely there's something the three of us can do to make a little bit of a difference. And we didn't have anything particular in mind in terms of what the project would be. We just knew that we were open to doing something. And at that time, our lives, all three of our lives, were very different in terms of what we were actually doing. Mm-hmm. So I moved to Uganda, and shortly thereafter, Devin and Ginny came over for a visit. We were walking through a slum, and we were on our way actually to visit a woman who was dying of AIDS, who was going to give her children up to an orphanage that I was volunteering in. And we met this woman who was sitting in the dust outside her very small house, and she was doing something with her hands. And it looked like she was rolling something of a long piece of paper. So just out of curiosity, we stopped and started to chat with her. And we found out a little bit about her story. She was working in a rock quarry for $1 a day. And that means arriving at dawn and lifting a heavy hammer all day long in the hot sun, smashing it down on bigger rocks to make pebbles for road grade. And she said that she loved doing handiwork, like women all over the world. Mm-hmm. And she had learned how to roll paper beads. But she said, you know what, there's no market for paper beads. So Devin and Jenny and I, we each bought a couple of necklaces thinking, well, we like them and, you know, God bless you and we're on our way. Mm-hmm. And what we discovered in the coming few days was that other people were admiring these necklaces that we'd bought. So we thought to ourselves, wow, there's a possibility here. Devin, why don't you tell the second half of this story?
Well, we had called this woman, and we asked her to bring together any other woman in the community who had learned to make these beads. And when we got to this community, there must have been about 500 people. There were over 100 women. There must have been 300 or 400 children in this community center. It was just this amazing scene. And we proceeded to do what is very common in many Ugandan towns and African towns, which is we got together and we sang and we danced and we talked. And in the course of that afternoon, we ended up buying two or three necklaces for each woman with the idea that we would try and test the market. And so we took these necklaces and we went back to our homes in North America, and we just started telling people about the beads and showing people the beads. And what we found was that there was this incredible interest. And the beads themselves are beautiful, but the real piece that captured people's imagination was the story of these hardworking women. Most of them had fled from a terrible, terrible conflict in northern Uganda, and were trying to eke out their living in this rock quarry. And the fact that by buying these beads, you were really not only helping this woman achieve her dreams and support her family, but connecting to her in some important way. And everywhere we went, we started getting incredible support and people who were interested and wanted to hear the story and wanted to buy the beads. And we thought to ourselves, my goodness, what have we discovered here? You know, mm-hmm. at that, we didn't have any grand plan to make a big organization or to, you know, to do anything. We just were carrying around these beads in our purses and telling the story. And it wasn't until September of 2004 that we met, and we said, you know, we cast this intention 9 months ago, and here's this amazing thing, which is not, you know, quite, we hadn't planned it, but here's this opportunity for us, and we felt like the world was asking us to say yes to this. And so at that point, we sort of officially decided that we would found a very small nonprofit organization called Beads for Life with, you know, no money and no paid staff and very little experience in selling a product, but mm-hmm. a belief that we had been given a chance to make a difference in some people's lives, and the rest is history.
Fascinating story. How is life like living in Uganda? Because you spend a lot of time there, and of course you're working so far away from your moms and your family here in the United States. How is life like living in Uganda?
Yeah, well, we've both taken turns living in Uganda full time and running our operations there, and mm-hmm. It, of course, both amazing opportunities and beautiful things and challenges. You know, the opportunity, I think both of us would say, to work directly with Ugandan women who, mm-hmm. in the process of making beads out of recycled paper, are able to lift their families out of poverty is the most rewarding thing I've ever done. It's truly amazing to, you know, see week by week, literally, a woman changing her life. She's gaining weight. You know, she's fixing her house. She's repairing her roof that used to leak. She's putting her children in school. So it's very gratifying work, and it's an honor, I think, and a privilege that we both feel to be able to do that. But it's hard to be half a continent away from your loved ones and your friends. I had my son; he was 2.5 years old when we moved back this time to live in Uganda. It's certainly interesting raising a child there. But on the other hand, it's such a family-oriented place, you know. Mm-hmm. Ugandans are the nicest people I've ever met, and the staff that we've brought in to work with Beads for Life really is a family too. So we've tried to create a culture of love and participation and caring of each other, both within the staff and within the women that we work with. So it feels great to know that mom is here, you know, and we're supporting each other. Although sometimes I have to say we fall into the trap of getting on the phone and talking only about business and not about anything.
Her husband sometimes say, okay, we can't talk about Beads for Life today. We're going on a family picnic. We have a Beads for Life free zone.
I'm looking at both of your bio. You guys have a tremendous amount of organizational skills, and something that obviously helps in building a wonderful organization, because one of the greatest challenges I would think would be to go to a country and then say, okay, hey, we want to set up something here to help you guys. And I'm sure y'all are not the only one that trying to do this and help people in developing countries. But the problem is that a lot of times there are a lot of people that go out there, take advantage of the people in developing countries, making promises that they can't deliver, and not to mention that just basically exploitation. And so that's a big twist versus what you guys have done versus someone else. What are some of the early successes, Tolkien, that helped to fuel this passion further along and further along? Because you guys are just phenomenal right now.
Well, thank you. You know, we one of the hesitations we had when we started Beat for Life was that it seemed that the project that had come to us was a business project. It had a product, and the product had to be sold. And we didn't have one day of business experience amongst the three of us, including our friend Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
So we hesitated, and we thought, we don't know how to sell beads. We don't know. And for that matter, we're not very interested in selling things.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to, I think one of the very important early successes we had was a decision we made to sell the beads woman to woman, that we would trust what we knew about love, intimacy between women, the instinct to help, and the passion for telling their stories, the storytelling mm-hmm. element. Because as Devin said a moment ago, the people in North America love the beads. They're very pretty, very colorful, lightweight, affordable. But when you put it together with the story of a woman who's working hard to bring her family out of poverty, that's just a compelling story. And people just gravitate to that story and that action that actually helps people. So that early decision to sell in something that's now called a bead party, which is the ability of an ordinary person, maybe one of your listeners might be interested in this, to bring beads into their home or office or to a school or a book
mm-hmm.
club, that they can get involved. So that what happened when we launched this concept of the bead party is that, you know, we send 400 items and help a hostess understand
mm-hmm.
what it's like for women. And what happens is that people come to that party, they have a good time. They buy
mm-hmm.
some pretty things, they chat one another up, maybe they learn something about Uganda and about poverty. They leave that party feeling good about themselves. They've put their money and their heart and their mind in a space that they helped somebody, and that all generosity always feels good. So what happens is people go home from a bead party and they say, I can do this. This was really fun. I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a model that started sustaining itself. One party, two parties, 16 parties, 32 parties. So it grew in that way. Another very important early success we had was that I had a friend who was a contributing editor to O Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And we started this in September of 2004. In December of 2004, my friend had a very, very small article, 200-word article, and a very small picture in the Christmas edition of O Magazine. That's probably a 400-page magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So very small mention. And we had just gotten a volunteer to make a website. Everything had been volunteer up to this point. We didn't have any money whatsoever. And O Magazine came out, and that single tiny article raised $90,000 for us. We
Fantastic.
Were astounded. We were astounded. And it really proved the desire of ordinary people to get involved, to make a difference,
right.
to put their money in the cause of other people. So with that very first money, we hired one person and a little tiny office, and we just began, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's been a very organic organization in its growth. You know, make a step here. Think smartly about poverty eradication, make a step there. And truly, over the 7 years, we continue to refine our model and to try and think as smart as we can and to bring love to the relationships within the organization, which I think is the glue that keeps us all going. And so I would say that those two things, our O Magazine and our decision to go with the home party, those are certainly two successes of many, many. But those were two early successes that made a difference.
What I'm hearing also is that you guys are operating from the heart center, so that makes a big difference because I think that
yeah.
energy just transfers to everyone that you meet and connected with everyone, and they understand that this is not for profit. And this is not about you guys making a dime on it. It's about getting the word out and helping the people that needed it the most, the people in Africa. So fascinating story.
Mm-hmm.
Devin, please share with us the 18-month program Ugandan women participate in through Beat for Life.
Yeah. the 18-month program has really evolved over the first 3 or 4 years. And I would say one of the other things that was really lucky for us is that because we didn't come in with a big plan or really know what we were doing, we were very humble at the beginning. And mm-hmm. even today, you know, we're always questioning, is this working? We're trying to do a lot of evaluation. And if we're doing something that's not effective, we're very quick to change our mind and to try something else. So as opposed to somebody that comes in with a big business plan or you know, a grand five-year strategy, we've worked very, as Mom says, organically, and we've grown, and we've been humble in knowing that we don't know everything. So mm-hmm. the model really came about as a series of trials and errors to figure out what's really the most effective in getting people out of poverty. Our goal was always to see Beef for Life as a ladder out of poverty, so that rather than coming in and providing a service to women for years and years and years, we wanted to create a sustainable program that allowed women in a relatively short period of time to change their own lives, not mm-hmm. to create dependency on Beef for Life or any other organization, but to gain the skills and the confidence and the tools and the capital that they needed themselves to get out of poverty. So women are enrolled for 18 months, come into our program through a very detailed selection process in which our team does home visits and evaluates really two criteria. One is the woman very, very poor? And this is mm-hmm. hard because there's a lot of people who are poor, and we're trying to find really the poorest of the poor, the people who stand to benefit the most from our program.
Mm-hmm.
Once we've evaluated that, we also look at people for entrepreneurial ability, or really what we look for is a desire for them that they have to change their lives. And those people who are both very poor and have a dream, a vision for their future are the people that we enroll in our program. We teach them to make beads and to make different types of jewelry. We have earrings and bracelets and necklaces in our line. And then they come into a 15-month period where they're making beads every month. And they are selling those beads, and they're increasing their income on average about 8 times from what they were previously earning. So all of a sudden, they really are starting to have more money. And the immediate thing that you start to see is that they are putting their children in school, their nutrition improves, sometimes they move houses or they improve the house that they're in. So you start to see, as they have access to a little bit more money, they're making very mm-hmm. immediate, desperately needed improvements. During the course of the time that they're making beads, there are three sort of pots of money that their earnings go into. When they sell us seeds, they take a portion of that sale and take it home with them in cash. So that's what is buying the food, is paying their children's school fees. Mm-hmm. Another is invested into a woman's business fund. And the idea behind that is that she's able to accumulate enough money in the course of her time that she can start a business, that she has the capital to invest in getting a little retail space or buying all the supplies mm-hmm. she needs to sell shoes. The third amount, whatever's left over from what she sold and those two amounts, goes into an individual savings account for her. And she's the only one who has access to it. She can go and immediately withdraw that money if she wants. But what we've heard from the women as we've evaluated is that that's one of the most important pieces for them, both to save and accumulate money so that when they need it, they have it, and to enter the modern financial world that many of these mm-hmm. women have never had a bank account or even been into a bank before. And so starting to understand how to save and the fact that you could then maybe get a loan if you had a savings account is very important.
So, that's fascinating, yeah.
And then after 15 months, during which the women are not only making beads but getting very extensive coaching and training in entrepreneurial skills and small business creation, they are encouraged to open a business before they graduate, before they leave Beef for Life. And they use the money that they've saved, and they have a team that works with them very closely, and they start a business. The last 3 months of the program are for them not to be making Beef at all, but just to be focusing on their business. And they still are earning money during that time, but they're focused entirely on making their business sustainable, so that when they graduate after 18 months, that they're not falling back into poverty. And what we're finding is that women, in some cases, are opening two or three businesses during that time. So they have a diversified income stream that helps support them into the future.
Basically, you guys are really educating them rather than just using this labor force to make stuff to sell and just keep it, whether they're keeping it or part of the organization is keeping it, because you guys are actually teaching them to be independent.
Absolutely.
That's right.
If we go away at some point, if Feed for Life ceases to exist, we want women who are absolutely capable of supporting themselves.
How has the local community in Uganda support you guys with regards to the projects? Are they really into buying into the project itself?
You mean the Ugandan people or community?
Yeah, the community.
Well, one of the interesting things about what we started is that when we came and started our bead project, there was nobody else making beads. Now there's over 100 other organizations who see what we've done and say, wow, this is a, you know, we could do this too. We have women in our social service project who could be making beads. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, we'll never meet the thousands of people who are now making a little bit of income from paper beads. And we have taken a very clear attitude that these are our friends and our colleagues that are doing our work, rather than, oh, these are competitors making paper
right.
beads. So so that's one thing. We've launched a huge cottage industry in Uganda that's very well received. I would say that the communities that we've worked with are 100% supportive and will do anything that they can to assist us or to get their people enrolled in our programs. Other programs that we run have to do with the education of youth, particularly girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have several hundred young people who are studying in vocational training to become beauticians and caterers and IT folks and electricians. And then we're sending girls to school. And so all of those various communities that we're touching in Bead for Life in Uganda are, I think, very supportive and appreciative and want to work with us and want to attract us to work with them.
And I presume that this model could be duplicated elsewhere too, correct?
You know, it certainly could be. The model that we use in Uganda, I think, is well worth studying because it creates independence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an aid program. We don't give anything away at Bead for Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is a model of work that is more and more accepted. Certainly, poor people having access to finances
mm-hmm.
is a key to getting out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's also, you know, our model that doesn't just give the money, because many microfinance groups make small amounts of money available. But we do extensive training and working with people. You know, if you're extremely poor, you've never had money, so you don't know anything about how to manage it. You've never
right.
been inside a bank. You've never had to think, how will I spend my money? Because when you live on a dollar a day, the only thing you can afford is the cheapest carbohydrate
mm-hmm.
and maybe a lump of coal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no decisions to be made about, well, shall I put money aside for my health insurance or for the new car? Or you know, there's nothing like that. So Bead for Life, spending so much time training people, I think is also something that becomes a model in how to marry that with microfinance programs. So I think there's quite a few things that we've developed that are very successful and that people are looking at.
Very interesting. What I'm looking at, these individuals were actually just, when you talk about earning a dollar a day, that's just survival money. And now...
That's right.
Above and beyond that, you guys are teaching them to actually how to live and prepare and plan the future for themselves as well as their family.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's amazing. What are some of the major challenges, though? I'm sure there are challenges, Devin.
There are challenges, always, anywhere you work in the world. Certainly working in a different culture is always interesting and takes a lot of learning and listening. There are some different cultural norms. The role of women in Uganda is much more a subservient role. And so we really look at our program and figure out how do we work with the women so that they are empowered and that they can make good decisions about the money, with a husband if they have a cooperative husband, but oftentimes they don't, or they're separated, or the husband, will take the money. And so to look at ways that we really empower the women. We've moved into a more rural area where this is even more of a situation, and so we're really looking at how do we engage with the whole family to make sure that the money that the women earn benefits the family and the children. Another issue that we deal with and we struggle with is corruption. With Ugandan society, certainly, there's people who expect to get kickbacks or ways that people look to get a little bit off the top, and we're an organization that's really tried to commit to transparent and honest operations, and so that's something that we've been up against, from time to time.
And how do you guys handle that?
Well, we're always looking for corruption. We always have our team, trying to figure out how might somebody be trying to work the system, and when find it, we try and deal with it in the most appropriate way. One of the things that I've learned in working in Uganda is that whereas I would take a very strong line against, someone that is cheating our system, is the Ugandan culture is much more about giving people a second chance and forgiving. So I've had to really learn and listen to my colleagues there about to deal with each individual situation. And I would say there's no one rule as much as trying to understand case by case and get as much feedback and input from the local team as I can.
To date, how many people have graduated from Beat for Life program that are successful on their own and perhaps in this case contribute back to the system?
Yeah, I think between the women who have graduated and the women who are currently enrolled in our program, we're somewhere in the 900th woman. And so that's very exciting, seeing not only our current members but our alumni, and seeing some of our alumni who have been wildly successful. And we often try and tap into different women with different experience to come back and speak to the current members and encourage them, to say, I was exactly where you are. You can do this. You can change your life. I'm now successful, and I have 5 businesses, and I'm earning, $2 million shillings a month, and to an example to the women who are in the process today.
Johnny, we have a second program that we haven't mentioned yet, which is our newest initiative that we're really excited about. We decided as a board we wanted to reach more poor women, and that we looked for another way to do that. And we landed on the naturally growing shea nuts from northern Uganda. Now, I don't know as a guy if you know about shea butter. Shea butter is an ingredient that goes into almost every cosmetic or to many cosmetics.
I think bath soap has some of those too, correct?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So so here was a resource that grows in Uganda across the north, and it was only being used locally. And the north is very, very poor, dirt poor in the real sense of that word. And so we thought if we could open up the international market to this resource, that potentially we could affect tens of thousands of people who could gather and process the nuts. So just now we're just in our early stages of bringing this product to market. And we've made 2 products ourselves, soap and a lip balm, and we're going to bring out a few more products in the future. And we're selling the pure butter to cosmetic companies. And right now we're working with 760 women in the north who gather the nuts and dry them and process them. So the 900 that Devin's talking about, those are all beaters. Those are people who've come and moved through our program. And so we have several other programs, and the Shea initiative is our newest one, and we're excited and off to a very good start with that.
If we were to track the money going through from the retail side and going all the way back to these individual women that are working, what percentage would you say that is all reinvested back to them?
Well, as Rob mentioned, we are working not only with the women that make the youth, but we also have the school fees program. We do some small grants, and we're working with over 700 women in the North. So, you know, the number is quite large. Of every $10 that you spend on a necklace, and many of our necklaces are priced at $10, over $7 would go back to target women specifically trying to move out of poverty in a variety of ways. So either paid directly to them in buying their beads or buying their chanuts, reinvested in community development programs like our entrepreneurial program that helps support them to start businesses, or a health program that we've run which supplies them with mosquito nets and deworming tablets for their family, or grants that are made to other organizations working in very targeted ways to help, you know, women and very impoverished men come out of poverty. So over $7 goes into that.
So you're looking at 70% goes right back into the operational side, because the 30% obviously has to cover the operational costs. And then the rest was just basically invested back to the various individuals. So that's a huge sum of money.
That's right. And you know, we haven't spent very much time talking about our mission in North America, but we really do think of not only our work in Uganda as being critical, but also the work engaging and educating people in North America and around the world about extreme poverty, because there are so many things that people here can do that make a difference on the lives of people living on a dollar a day who we may never meet, but who we can, you know, have some sort of positive impact on. And so all North America, we think, is equally important and has to do with helping people understand extreme poverty, understand that although it's a really difficult problem, it's not impossible to solve, that there are incredible organizations around the world that are working to do things, and that you can be part of the solution. You know, we think about poverty and we think, oh, there's nothing to do, or, you know, everybody just wants me to write a check. And in fact, there's lots of ways that everyday citizens can participate. And so of that 30% remaining, a portion of that goes towards really helping develop education materials. We've just launched a curriculum for young people in America to help them understand these issues, and we feel like that's a critical part of our mission as well.
Let's talk about the curriculum. Tell me a little bit about the Beat for Life curriculum that you guys have created for the youth, and how are they responding to it?
Well, it's called Understanding Extreme Poverty and How Youth Can Make a Difference.
Mm-hmm.
We started with this idea that people of good heart, if they know more about this problem, they tend to get involved. So we decided that we would target young people who, when you have experiences in your youth, in your childhood, that impact you greatly. I think they tend to, if we can turn you into somebody who's interested in the issues of extreme poverty and the maldistribution of the resources around the world, that's something we want to do. So this is a, we're really excited about it. It's a 5-session curriculum, and it each session is dynamic and experiential, and it's targeted really for middle schools and high schools, but we've had lots of grammar schools and even university folks who've used it and modified it. And it, for instance, one of the exercises in it has something called the Earth Cake. And we asked the teacher to divide the cake according to the population of the world and the resources that are there. So the people who, the class is divided, and the kids who end up as Africans, they get maybe 4% of the pie. The people in North America, who maybe only two of the youngsters become the North Americans, they get 28% of the pie, or the cake. And so at the end of the session, the young people have had a chance to feel what it's like to have nothing, or what it's like to have so much in a world where many people have very little. And it causes a wonderful conversation, not to create either guilt or shame in North America about the fact that we're a relatively well-off country, but to help people understand what extreme poverty is like, and then to move into kind of an action plan. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we have with the curriculum now is that at the end of the five sessions, we encourage the young people to take an action, either in their own community, like working with a food bank or a homeless shelter or a clothes drive, or to give a bead party and tell the story about poverty in Africa. And if they do that, then they can raise funds for their own school. We send them back 20% of whatever they earn. So it's a wonderful fundraiser for young people, which is a good skill for young people to learn how to raise money.
Right.
And kids have a great time doing it, and oftentimes they involve the entire school so that from one classroom it moves out into the school. And the curriculum is wonderful not only for teachers but for any youth workers. We have a lot of Girl Scout troops and Sunday schools and camps that are starting to use the curriculum maybe one session at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just getting wonderful feedback, and it's been written to comply with the teaching standards in the United States. So it's really, and it's free. That's the best part. We decided that we wanted everybody to have it. So you can go to our website, which is www.beadforlife.org, and you can download the curriculum
mm-hmm.
and see if you'd like to use it and teach it.
That's fabulous.
So yeah, it is. We have over 2,000 youth workers have downloaded it,
mm-hmm.
and we're getting wonderful feedback now on the various ways they've used it or adapted it and how helpful it is.
How does the adult support that as well? I mean, is this part of the program that is included with the Circle of Connection that you guys do as well?
The Bead Circle, yeah, it definitely is. And anybody who's teaching the curriculum is really diving into the issues of extreme poverty and what it's like to live and how hard it is to live on a dollar a day. And so young people who study the curriculum and youth leaders, teachers who teach it, they
mm-hmm.
go on to do more things. And maybe they decide to buy beads for Christmas for all their friends, or maybe they decide to do something in their own community. And we just love to hear those stories because a lot of our work in North America and in Europe has to do with just creating a welcome to people who want to do something and don't quite know what to do, don't quite know how to get started. And so the curriculum is a doorway that's wide open for anybody interested in teaching youth or young adults about extreme poverty.
Very interesting. You have also launched an office in Europe. How does the European women get involved with this?
Our European program is also a fairly new program, and Devin mentioned the importance of cultural sensitivity and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, the home party is not nearly as common or understood.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of our program, we do have bead parties in Europe, but it's not as common a phenomena. And so what we are much more likely to do in Europe is help people get involved through events and fairs and through the fair trade retail market in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Fair trade is one way that every American and everybody throughout the world can get involved in helping artisans all over the world who make products that are sold in stores. And it's a important way that with our dollars we can make a difference. And in Europe, I think there's a very high value to buy fair trade goods. So we are marketing our beads in the fair trade retail world in Europe and going to quite a few events where we can talk to people and tell them how they can get involved and help them participate in Bead for Life.
Interesting. Devin, as education is a big part of your mission, what is the latest grade that you can report to us regarding this?
I think that's a B+, Jenny. You know, we really look at education both in Uganda, the women that we're working with, helping them get sustainable skills to stand on their own, and as we've just been discussing, educating and engaging global citizens around the world in what is extreme poverty and how can we all participate in ending that. So
mm-hmm.
we do focus on that. And, you know, I think the other thing about Bead for Life is that we really think of the connection between Ugandan women and women in America or other parts of the world as a circle of connection. It's not just us helping some poor woman over there. It's us benefiting at the same time. And the impact that having a party in your house or buying beads on our website and wearing them and telling the story has on women here has been very profound. We've heard from many women that when they received their bead party shipment, they opened the box and saw all the beads, and they just wept because they could feel the hopes and dreams that the women in Uganda roll into these beads, and they were honored to be a part of changing someone's life. And so we don't think of it as a one-way connection. We think of it as a circle of exchange in which we all benefit and we're all enriched. So between our education initiatives and our focus on heartful connection, I give us a B-plus only because there's always room to grow.
Very interesting. What can we expect in 2011?
Well, we have set a project, which is very exciting, and we are currently working on quite a few agricultural initiatives in northern area. I just talked to one of the team members yesterday who said that we've looked at ways to help connect the women who have mango trees to a box in the capital. So not only are we looking at creating direct markets ourselves that create sustainable income, but also looking for other ways to support the women into sustainable futures. So we're very excited about that. We're very excited about the new products of the Shea products that we'll be launching here. So that's exciting.
Fantastic.
We also have two groups of women making beads in a more rural area, and that's been a big learning process for us, and it's having tremendous impacts on the women in that rural community. So on the Uganda side, those are a few new things that are coming.
Token, where can someone get more information about Beat for Life and get involved with this wonderful mission? I know you mentioned about your website just now. Perhaps you can elaborate a little bit more on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, our home office in the United States is in Boulder, Colorado. And so we certainly invite anybody who's in our neck of the woods to come in and volunteer with us and to shop at our store and be part of us. This idea of the bead circle is something that is really important to us. It's all of us who are making a difference being webbed together. So we also have social media. We are on Facebook. And if you come to Facebook, please like us and join us. As I said, the website is full of information about how to host a party, how to buy beads, how to give beads. You know, right now we're coming up to June with all the brides and the graduates, and beads make a wonderful gift for teachers at the end of the year. So, buying beads and giving beads. When you do that, you become part of a circle of people who's really very immediately affecting the lives of people in Uganda. So it's fairly easy. I like to say we have a big tent and the flap is up. Please come on in and join us. Give a bead party. That's a wonderful way. Teach the curriculum. You can make a donation to Bead for Life if you'd like. And one of the programs that Devin and I haven't talked too much about is educating girls. And we have young girls who are sitting at home because their parents don't have the money for them to go to school. And we have picked girls who on their exams have been the top girls in terms of their grades, and we're now sending them to school. So that's another way if you want to, you know, really get involved and make a donation to send a girl to school, there's another way. Encouraging your listeners to think about extreme poverty and to buy fair trade goods. That's yet another way that, you know, you go into a store, and if it's a fair trade good, it'll be marked in some way, and there'll be a story about the artisans somewhere in the world who are depending on a market for their goods, whether it's coffee or sugar or craft items. So, using your dollars to make a difference. We all like to shop, and we need to shop, and when you do, you can make a choice to support people a world away. Or locally. You know, there are many wonderful local poverty eradication projects.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every community has poor people. And so even though we work with the extreme poor in Africa, there's extremely poor people in other parts of the world, and there are poor in the U.S. as well.
Very true. How has having Devin's involvement in this project impacted you personally?
Well, you know, it's such a joy as a parent to work with a grown child, and to just, you know, for me to work with Devin and see how smart she is and how loving, how many wonderful ideas she has and how much energy she brings to her work and just all of her many, many fine attributes. It's just makes me smile. It's a privilege. I think that most of us don't anticipate that we're going to do professional work with our children. And so this was a very unlooked for chapter that we birthed together, and that we've worked together now for 7 years. At the very beginning, I think we had to have a few conversations about, you know, who's going to decide what. And as the parent, I think that it was important for me to leave plenty of room for Devin and her ideas to come forth. And I think I've done a pretty good job at that. And, you know, every so often we've had one or two conversations to clear up, like, well, why did you say that or something? And, but mostly it's been just a joy, and it's been a very successful collaboration, full of heart and laughter and sharing the difficulties too. It's, you know, we've cried together more than once as well.
Fantastic. Devin, what is the greatest reward? Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm interested in Devin's answer to that same question.
Devin, how about this? Your mom is asking you, how has it impacted you having to work with your mom?
It's been great. You know, I mean, I think, as Mom said at the beginning, we thought, oh, you know, what will this be like, you know, mixing an intense family relationship with a very intense business relationship. And you know, overall, it's been just a joy and a privilege to work with Mom and to see her vision and inspiration and to have a chance to, you know, really actualize a dream that we both had, using our collective skills and talents. So it's been great.
Wonderful.
We have different talents, Johnny.
You all have different talents to contribute to this.
We have different talents.
Okay.
So, you know, Devin is very good at operationalizing, and I'm very good at kind of seeing the vision. So Devin likes to say, I'm going to keep the scaffolding. I'm going to keep building scaffolding under your ideas. But in truth, she has got lots of her own great ideas as well.
Fantastic, ladies. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you ladies have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning? Either one of you can start with this.
You know, I don't know if it's grand recipe, but I think to do what you love and to do something that matters. And, you know, we don't all have the privilege to do that as a full-time job, but we all have an opportunity to see, you know, something that we care about and a need in our community, and to plug in a variety of ways. And, you know, as I talked about in our circle of connection, helping others is not only truly altruistic, it really is something that feels good and it feeds your soul. So I think that that's an important piece of what I've done. And then, you know, don't let your ego get in the way. Stay humble. You know, be open to learning. Those are the kind of things I try and remember every day, because, you know, there's always more to learn.
Fantastic.
I think that my recipe for life has to do with showing up fully, bringing your whole self to every moment. And with that showing up fully is listening deeply. Because only when you're listening, I think, do you really feel your proper way into relationship and community. And the second thing that I think is incredibly important is to bring love to every situation. You know, and sometimes if there's a problem, it's like, okay, just sit with it until you can feel, you know, how how the human heart, what's needed from the human heart. And so compassion and love as, you know, a daily a meditation. And then finally, I would say, be bold. You know, you can spend a lot of energy doing something in a very small way, and sometimes that's perfect. That's what's needed. But sometimes a very large, bold step is what's needed. And I would encourage that in life to bring love, to show up fully, and to be bold.
That's fabulous. Ladies, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. Devin, when are you coming back to the United States? I know you are in the United States right now, but you plan to go back to Uganda, correct?
No, I'm actually in the process of transitioning my family back here to live for the foreseeable future.
Oh, so you're sending mom over there now, right?
Well, I'll be going more often, no doubt.
We have really empowered a terrific local team to run the operations there, and we'll, both of us will be visiting periodically.
Fantastic. You guys have done a tremendous job to make a positive difference in our global community. Kudos to you guys. And Tolkien, Devin, thank you again, and have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Johnny. It was fun to be on your show.
To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the tape interview with Tolkien and Devin. Please join me in 2 weeks on Tuesday morning, May 31st. My guest will be Karen LaFranc. Born in Sweden, Karen has traveled the world many times over because of her family and work. She owns a children's store called Over the Moon in Avon, Connecticut. This is where she offers classes from high tea and etiquette to please pass the table manners. Karen and I will be discussing about her life's journey and her new book titled A Quest for Good Manners. It is a fun and cute book showing kids why it is important to be polite. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Bye-bye.